Ilya!
Bakat heard the name, which only confirmed what he had already read in the sign. It was the sound of Letty's voice that cut him to the heart with both joy and dread. Joy that she was alive, and dread that she had fallen into the hands of such a terrible enemy. He looked up at the copy from which her cries had come. He made out the one sure and easy route to the summit, and the urge to rush up it was almost too strong to resist. He dug the nails of his right hand into the palm so that the pain would steady him, then studied the bare cliffs of the hill. "Tria has chosen his ground well," he said aloud. Once again he considered that single route to the summit and saw it was a death trap. Tria would be perched above him, shooting his arrows down at him all the way. Bakat circled the kopje, and on the far side he picked out an alternative route. It was difficult. Parts of it were so steep and dangerous that they might be impassable. A slip would mean that he would plunge down onto the rocks below. However, most of the path was concealed from above by an overhang, jutting out just below the summit. Only the last part of the climb would be exposed to a watcher at the top of the kopje. Bakat ran back to the camp. He laid aside his bow and quiver. He would be on the summit, and the range was too close for bow work before he and Tria came together. He selected only his knife and the axe, both better suited to close fighting. Then he laid out the wet buffalo skin, and from it swiftly shaped and cut out a cape that would cover his head and shoulders. The thick hide had already begun to stink in the heat, but it would provide an effective armour against a reed arrow. He rolled the heavy cape and strapped it onto his back. Then he ran back to the kopje, but circled round to come directly to the protected route he had chosen. Stealthily he crept through the bush at the foot of the hill, and reached the cliff under cover of the overhang, almost certain that Tria had not spotted him. But with Tria you could never be certain. He rested for only a few moments, gathering himself for the climb, but before he could begin, Letty's screams rang out again, high above him. Then Tria's voice called down to him, "Watch me, Bakat! See what I am doing to this woman of yours! Ah, yes, there my fingers are deep inside her! She is tight and slippery!" Bakat tried to close his ears to Tria's taunts, but he could not. "Listen to your woman, Bakat! These are only my fingers, but next she will feel something much bigger! How she will squeal when she feels that!" Letty was sobbing and shrieking, and Tria was giggling. The stone cliffs of the kopje magnified and echoed the dreadful sounds. Bakat had to force himself to remain silent. He knew that Tria wanted him to voice his rage, and in so doing betray his position. Tria could not be sure which path Bakat would use to try to reach the summit. Bakat went to the wall of red rock and began to climb it. He went swiftly at first, running up the wall like a gecko lizard. Then he reached the overhang and was hanging out backwards, reaching for every finger and toehold, dragging himself round by the strength of his arms. The axe and the roll of wet skin hampered his movements, and gradually his progress slowed. The drop gaped beneath his dangling feet. He reached for another handhold, but as he placed his weight on it, it broke off. A lump of rock twice his own size came loose from the roof above him. It grazed his head and hurtled down the cliff to crash against the wall lower down. The echoes boomed out across the valley as it bounded on, kicking up a storm of dust and rock splinters every time it struck. For terrible seconds, Bakat hung by the fingers of one hand. He scrabbled desperately with the other and at last found a hold. He hung there for a while, trying to gather himself. There were no more taunts from Tria. He knew now exactly where Bakat was, and would be waiting for him at the top of the cliff, a poison arrow knocked to his bow. Bakat had no choice. The slab that had broken away had altered the shape of the wall and cut off his retreat. There was only one route open to him, and that was upwards, to where Tria was waiting. Painfully slowly, Bakat worked his way over the last stretch and round the outer angle of the overhang. At any instant he would have a view to the summit ridge, but Tria would be able to see him. Then, with a rush of relief, Bakat found a narrow ledge below the lip. It was only just wide enough for him to squeeze himself onto it. He crouched there for what seemed a lifetime, and slowly the strength returned to his numbed, shaking arms. Carefully he unrolled the buffalo skin cape and draped it over his head and shoulders. He made certain that his knife and axe were still in his belt. He came gingerly to his feet on the tiny ledge and flattened his body against the wall to maintain his balance. He was standing on his toes, his heels hanging out over the drop. He reached up and ran both hands along the lip of the cliff as high as he could reach. He found a niche just wide and deep enough for him to insert both hands and take a firm grip. He pulled himself upwards and his toes left the ledge. For a long, terrible interlude, his feet dabbed against the face without finding purchase. Then he pulled himself just high enough to throw one arm over the top of the cliff. As his head came up, he looked towards the summit ledge just above. Theo was watching him. He was smiling, and his eyes were slitted as he sighted over the arrow. His bow was at full draw, the arrowhead aimed at Bakut's face. It was so close that Bakut could see each of the carved barbs. As sharp as the eye-tooth of the striped tigerfish, the dung-brown poison dried into a thick paste between each barb. Gia loosened his arrow. It came with a flitting sound, as fast as a darting swallow, and Bakut was unable to duck or dodge. It seemed that the point would find the opening in his hide cape and strike him in the throat, but at the last instant it drifted off course and struck his shoulder. He felt the jerk as the point of the arrowhead snagged in a fold of the tough buffalo hide. The shaft snapped off and fell away, but the head stayed buried in the cape. Bakut was galvanized by the threat of horrible death. He threw himself upwards the last few feet, but as he teetered on the brink of the cliff, Thea knocked another arrow and aimed from a distance of only a few paces. Bakut hurled himself forward, and Thea loosened the second arrow. Once again, Bakut caught it in the heavy folds of his cape. Though the arrowhead was stuck in the tough hide, the shaft broke off. Thea reached for another arrow from his quiver, but Bakut charged into him and sent him reeling backwards. He dropped the bow and clung to Bakut, pinning his arms before Bakut could draw the knife from his belt. Chest to chest they struggled, turning in tight circles as they tried to swing each other off their feet. Letty lay where Thea had thrown her after he heard the fall of loose rock that had marked Bakut's position for him. She was still trussed at hand and foot, and she was bleeding where Thea had forced his fingers into her, and his ragged fingernails had torn her most tender flesh. She watched the two men wrestling each other, powerless to help her husband. Then she saw Thea's axe lying nearby, where he had left it. With two quick rolls, she reached it. She used her bare toes to tilt the axe head until the sharp blade was uppermost. Then, holding it securely between her feet, she laid the bark ropes that held her wrist across it, and sawed at them with all her strength. Every few seconds she glanced up. She saw Thea manage to hook one foot behind Bakut's heels and trip him over backwards. They both fell heavily onto the rocks, but Bakut was pinned under Thea's lithe, muscular body. He could not throw him off, and powerless to intervene, Letty watched Thea reach for the knife on his belt. Then, suddenly, unaccountably, Thea screamed and released his grip. He recoiled from Bakut and stared down at his own chest. It took Bakut a moment to realize what had happened. The arrowhead that had broken off in the folds of his cape had come between them as they wrestled, and Thea's weight had driven the poisoned barbs deeply into his own flesh. Thea sprang to his feet and tried with both hands to claw the arrowhead free of his flesh, but the barbs held fast. Each time he tore at them, a bright trickle of blood snaked down his bare chest.
"You are a dead man, Thea," Bakut croaked as he came to his knees.
Thea let out another scream, but this was rage, not terror.
"I will take you with me to the land of shadows."
He drew the knife from the sheath on his belt and rushed at Bakut, who was still on his knees. He lifted the knife, but when Bakut tried to dodge the blow, his legs caught in the folds of the heavy cape and he toppled backwards.
"You will die with me,"
Thea screamed as he stabbed at his adversary's chest. Bakat flung himself aside and the knife point grazed his upper arm. Kriya poised for the next blow, but Letty came to her feet behind him. Her ankles were still tied, but her hands were free, and she held the axe. She took one hop forward and swung the axe from overhead. The blade glanced off Kriya's skull, shaving away a thick slice of his scalp and one of his ears, then went on to bite deeply into the joint between his shoulder and knife arm. The knife dropped from his paralyzed fingers, and the arm dangled uselessly at his side. He whirled round to face the tiny girl, clutching his wounded scalp with one hand, blood springing from between his fingers in a fountain. "Run!" Bakat shouted at her and started to his feet. "Run, Letty!" Letty ignored him. Although her ankles were tied, she jumped straight at Thea. Fearless as a honey badger, she flew at his face and swung the axe again. Thea reeled backwards and lifted his other arm to protect himself. The axe blade crunched into his forearm just below the elbow, and the bone snapped. Thea staggered back, both arms maimed and useless. Letty bent swiftly and hacked away the ropes that held her ankles. Before Bakat could intervene, she rushed at Thea again. He saw her coming, a small fury, naked and outraged. Grievously wounded, he was tottering on the edge of the cliff. As he tried to dodge her next attack, he lost his balance and went over backwards. He had no arms to save himself, and he rolled down to the lip of the overhang, his blood staining the rock. He reached the edge and went over, disappearing from their view. They heard his scream receding in volume until there was a meaty thump and silence. Bakat ran to Letty. She dropped the axe and threw herself into his embrace. They clung together for a long time until Letty had stopped shaking and shivering. Then Bakat asked, "Shall we go down, woman?" She nodded vehemently. He led her to the head of the pathway and they climbed down to the bottom of the hill. They paused beside Thea's corpse. He lay on his back, and his eyes were wide and staring. His own arrowhead still protruded from his chest, and his half-severed arm was twisted under his back at an impossible angle. "This man is of the San, as we are? Why did he try to kill us?" Letty asked. "I will tell you this story one day," Bakat promised her. "But for now let us leave him to his totem, the hyenas." They turned away, and neither looked back as they broke into the quick trot that eats the wind. Bakat was taking his new woman to meet Somoya and Welanga.